Greetings, good listeners. Today, I want to share with you a complicated conversation about tough love. But before I do that, I need to briefly switch the channel from magical reality TV for the revolution to a real-time live stream on none other than Mama Bird. So I'm just adjusting the camera a little bit. Ah, there she is. Mama Bird wakes up this glorious good morning, yawning and stretching, basking in the sweet glow of the rising sun. Mama Bird cares for her strong and sturdy, bountiful nest here in the east. The east is the part of the altar where we lay down rest deep in the bones and come home to sincere peace in the mind and in the heart. Mama Bird overflows with gratitude that she is alive today and that she gets to do this very important work for the world, tending to her nest. Mama Bird settles into the heart of the home, snuggling down into her nest bowl, scooching back and forth to find the perfect spot, when suddenly, what the hell? Mama Bird stops in her tracks, taken aback at the sight of Little Bird hanging out on the left side of the nest. Oh my god, you're back again! Let me remind you, good listeners, the first time we met this duo, Mama Bird and Little Bird, was over a year ago when I published a podcast episode titled The Crazy Planet. I'll put the link in the show notes. This is why we find Mama Bird quite frustrated in this moment, because we've already been through this. In that last episode, Mama Bird engaged a great deal of negotiation with Little Bird. They went back and forth, Mama chased Little with a stick. It was tiring. They came to the conclusion that it was indeed time for Little Bird to leave the nest. More importantly, Little Bird agreed. Hence, Mama Bird's frustration at the sight of Little Bird rummaging around her kitchen, searching for snacks. Because we've already told this story. We cast the associated spell. We traveled the associated underworld. We retrieved the medicine, integrated the lessons. We even frolicked through a few time loops just for shits and giggles. Why are you still here? Little Bird flutters to the center, flapping her wings directly in front of Mama Bird. Do you know what happened to me last year? How would I know? I may be hella psychic, but I can't read your mind. There's a difference. Fine then. Little Bird flies to the couch and perches on the ledge, standing tall. She begins a great soliloquy, aka an act of speaking one's thoughts out loud by oneself, regardless of whether or not you have any good listeners. It was 10 minutes into this epic poem, aka a long narrative poetic device, typically recounting extraordinary deeds and adventures of a heroic figure, often involving supernatural elements and significant cultural or historical events. She is about to get to the best part when she notices Mama Bird is about to fall over, ready to fall asleep. Oh, sorry, am I boring you? Are the details of my life story the only life I have to live in the only time I have to spend about the only me I'll ever be? Is that too overwhelming for you? Girl, you know I don't have time for your Mahabharata today. What do you want? You are the one who made contact. You're here for a reason. If you have something to say, say something important. Fine then. Little Bird proceeds to tell Mama Bird about an excruciatingly horrible thing that happened to her. I'm not just telling you about a horrible thing that happened to me out there. It happened to me right here, before I left. That's right. It happened to me in your nest bowl. It happened right under your belly. Whoa. Mama Bird takes stock of this new information. A horrible thing happened to her little bird in her household, under her watch, under her jurisdiction while she was brooding her young. Brooding, by the way, is when a big bird covers her babies with her belly, just as she did while she incubated them as eggs. That's why we call this part of the belly the brooding patch. After they hatch, she still covers them, keeping them warm, especially in the first few weeks of their new life, especially if the weather is treacherous. Mama Bird lets the truth sink in. Then she speaks. Little Bird, it's not my job to feed you. It's not my job to nurse your wounds. What do you want from me? Band-aids? I'm sorry, I'm all out. Some kid used them for his weird art project. Look, you think I like hearing about what happened to you in the nest bowl? Of course I hate what happened to you in the nest bowl. But the fact remains that you're spending so much of your precious time explaining everything that happened to you, and I don't care what happened to you under my belly. I don't care what happened to you under my roof, and frankly, I don't give a shit about what happened to you in the nest bowl. You know why I don't care, little bird? Because you don't care. You don't care what happened to you amongst your siblings in the brooding patch of my underbelly. You don't care about all the horrible things that happened to you in your last 40 years of service, forward and backward. You are at peace with yourself. You're at peace with your past. And not because I told you to be, but because it's dripping all over you. I can't ignore it. Nobody can. That light is so bright. I can't see nothing else when I'm looking at you. It's like staring at the sun. And the paradox is that you'll never be seen by anyone unless and until you learn to embrace that light and own who you are. Why would you care about any of the fucked up shit that happened to you in your abolitionist, decolonizing, decastifying, de-religiousizing real-life version of the Mahabharata? What do you care if it was all worth it? And no, I don't mean it was all worth it like some incorporeal platitude, like, oh, it's okay, I don't mind all these shitty experiences, I got the spiritual lesson. No, I mean it was worth it. Like the life you made for yourself is actually real. Like the livelihood you want for yourself and for the planet is here. It's healthy, and none of it is a lie. Why do you care about how others have wronged you when good love is right here, right next to you, holding your hand and touching your heart every waking, dreaming minute of the day? What do you care about those shitty experiences if we're in a world now where nobody, and I mean none of us, are sentenced to endure the wretched in order to get to the divine? In this ecosystem, what if we could just have it? What if the ecosystem you sacrificed everything for is alive and well, and everyone here is fed? What does it matter, little bird? And what are you gonna do? Get lost in the memory of your birthing pains? Or just be present, here and now, and live? Give and receive care as you will, as you must, and keep flapping those dang wings. Make noise, but don't be noisy. Because it does still take some practice when it's time to fledge. I don't care about what happened to you under my belly because you don't care. I'm still your mama bird. I care about the things you care about. If you actually cared about this, of course I would care too. Of course I would step in and support you if this was a thing that actually needed support in your life. I ain't stepping in to support a ghost, a mirage. You think I got time for that? I got my own business. Mama bird swats little bird with a broom. Little bird makes a dance out of it. You don't care about picking at your scabs. No judgment toward those who do. It's just that it doesn't matter to you. It's not a worthy way to spend your time. What is worthy to you? because I see you, little bird. You care very, very deeply and very strongly. What happened to you in your past is not it. Whatever it is, I probably care about it for myself, too. So, what is it? Get out of here. When it's time to fledge, that thing that used to take care of you will stop taking care of you. That thing that used to feed you will stop feeding you. The thing that used to patch up your wounds will stop patching up your wounds. And your tried and true tools that you used to use to patch up your wounds will now be used for a different purpose, to make art by some weirdo, nerdy, neurodivergent kid who goes nonverbal for months at a time. The nest that held you through such formative years will still be here, but you have to stand awkwardly at the edge and practice your unique wing-flapping technology and prepare to find your own way in life. The nest that raised you is not your home base or your landing ground anymore, even if you haven't quite yet left. When it's time to fledge, the things you used to care about, you don't care about anymore. The things that used to capture your attention and absorb all your energy, they just don't. And the thing that happened to you in the underbelly of this divine world, you know, that Plutonian shit that everyone pretends they have no idea about even though everyone saw it in plain sight? The things that happen in the underbelly of a community, a family, amongst your peers, your siblings, spiritual or otherwise, that shit that used to be your antagonist, tucked under the belly of a brooding mother, in that safe, squishy place, your old antagonist snuggled up to you and took up so much space. There wasn't any other option. This brood was your whole world. The antagonist was the most important thing to fight. But it's not anymore because you grew up. You're outgrown. You're bigger than that now. Let the double or triple meaning sink in. You're bigger than that. This isn't about taking the high road. You actually just don't have a choice. I mean, you do, but it would be excruciatingly difficult and exhausting to try and fit yourself into an environment where the same old shit continues to be the biggest thorn in your ass. It's like a giant dog trying really hard to sit in a very small doggy bed. You know, they keep circling around and circling around, and finally they sit down, but their whole ass is basically just on the floor. What's the point of sitting in a doggy bed if your entire ass is on the floor? Fighting the same old antagonist is exhausting like that. It's really hard and it's really inconvenient. But I guess that makes sense for you, because you are so used to choosing the hardest puzzle, aren't you? You keep reaching for the puzzle on the shelf that is not only, like, level 9 Grand High Witch brain teaser, but you also know it has 3 missing pieces. You know it's a lost cause. You know it's a dead end. You know it'll only end in heartache. But you spend all your time on it anyway, giving yourself a migraine trying to complete it every time. And you know there's 3 missing pieces! Why you gotta do that? For people out there right now who are like, oh, why do things have to be so hard? Why is it so hard for things to just be easy? Diagnose the right problem! It's actually really easy for things to be easy right now. But you keep choosing the really hard puzzle. That's your problem. Why do you like this puzzle so much? When it has 3 missing pieces. Solve that problem, and you're off to the races. When it's time to fledge, the thing you used to care about the most, you realize you don't care about it so much anymore, and maybe you never did. When it's time to fledge, you'll be asked to feel deeply in your heart and tell yourself the truth. What actually matters to you right now, as you head into the next chapter of your life? What do you care about? You'll have to feel it in the body. You'll have to look to the realm of the south. You'll feel it like something tangible holding your hand, touching your heart, and moving you to tears. Not tears like boo-boo, goo-goo, gaga, wah-wah, hang it on the fridge. I mean tears like you're alive. You made it through the storm. You're here. It's real. And none of it is a lie. All right, let's turn the channel back over here, right over here on me. Let's do some writer-director commentary and pull out the ancestral medicine in this story. Who is Mama Bird in the world of magical reality TV for the revolution? I could give you a lot of different interpretations, but for today, let's just say that she is Pluto in Capricorn. As we know, Pluto spent the last 15 years in Capricorn and recently moved signs, now fully nestled in Aquarius, where she'll stay for the next 20 years. It is a big deal whenever Pluto moves signs, as this indicates a huge generational shift. This is where we are in cosmic history. Not only has Pluto changed signs, we have multiple outer planets, aka otherworldly giants, changing signs. And this is not only a generational shift, this is a gargantuous shift in eras. We are the ones holding the responsibility to collectively steward and experience this shift. We, as a species, are learning how to properly close the last chapter and leave the nest. We are learning how to be in good relationship to everything that held us and raised us, underbelly and all. We are all learning how to fledge. If you were to go back and listen to today's story about Mama Bird and Little Bird, or the one from a year ago, how would the story change for you if you understood the Mama Bird as Pluto in Capricorn? How would the story land for you if you interpreted Mama Bird as the mother of the last 15-year chapter of your life, and the mother of this previous era of time that we are all learning how to put to rest in a good way? Pluto in Capricorn. She's a tough cookie, huh? So let's have a complicated conversation about tough love. What is tough love if it isn't wrapped up in white supremacist, capitalist, casteist, ableist rape culture? What if tough love is a sincere and sacred expression in the universe? What if tough love is a benevolent primordial ancestor? And what if she's not just benevolent? What if she's a fiercely sincere, attentive, engaged, active ally, a good friend, and a constant daily presence? Some may argue that if white supremacy and colonization and all the rest of it didn't exist, there would be no need for tough love. What do you think? Do you agree with that? When I study the story that I just wrote, it illuminates an answer to a question that I didn't know I was asking. It gives me a very clear definition of what tough love is in a harmonious, thriving ecosystem. It's as if I had spoken out loud that specific inquiry, which I didn't, by the way. Tough love, as an ancestor says, I don't give a shit about the things you're crying yourself to sleep about every night. I care about what you actually care about. I'm not going to waste my time pacifying you or humoring you when you're caught up in shit that doesn't actually move you. Why would I do that? Just to be nice? That's not real love. I want to tell you a little story about a conversation I had with a good friend recently. We were talking about what we really need in life. When my friend told me their answer, I was like, wow, that is such a beautiful intention. But it's not something that I would have automatically thought you need. On the surface, it looks like you already have it. And you do have it in certain layers, but you want that thing on a deeper level now. I think that also speaks to where we are in cosmic history and what it means to fledge. Yes, to fledge, to take that first flight off the nest, does mean going higher. But it also means choosing a deeper experience of life. When you fly into the sky, you feel the depth of the world in your body in a way you never could while you were still on the nest. That nest may have provided that thing for you that you already have, but now you want it more deeply. And it's not selfish. It doesn't make you a better person to stay where you are and just be grateful for what you already have. It does, however, make you a better person to fly, to leave, to go higher and experience yourself and the world more deeply. You're a better person, and not on the grounds of morality, but because you're actually being honest about who you are, the size of your body, the time that we're in, and the stewardship, the care that we require in this moment. How can you be a better person on the grounds of morality if you're doing nothing to care for who you are and who we are, honestly? Be grateful for everything that raised you, yes, and also understand that it will make you a better person to realize a new depth. Sometimes it's selfish to stay. If you stayed in a home that can no longer house you, all you would have are continuous complaints about the bullshit that happened in the underbelly while you were growing your wings. When my friend told me this thing that they wanted more of for themselves, it took me for a pause, because I had no idea that's what they wanted. I won't tell you what they actually said, just for privacy, but let's make something up for the sake of our conversation. Let's say they wanted more friendship. If they said, "That's what I need more of in life, sincere friendship." It surprised me because I was like, "You already have that by your own definition. Like, I always hear you talking about how amazing your friendships are. You have a genuine abundance here that you're already aware of and that you're already in practice of constant appreciation." But when my friend said this, I received it deeply. I didn't get jealous or judgmental or resentful, like, "Oh, so your current friends aren't enough for you? Wow." That type of response didn't even cross my mind or my heart or my energy field. What I felt was one dominant energy, and I'm trying to land in the right word, and I think that word is reverence. I felt reverence for the emergence of this deeper part of my friend, a part of them that wants more, wants to be seen, known, and touched more deeply, a part of them that deserves to be developed, deserves attention, and deserves care. To speak out loud this part of them in development, in my company, is an act of vulnerability and trust that I don't take for granted. It's an honor for me to hear you tell me what you care about. It's a blessing to receive the depth of honesty you're allowing to come forward. Just to allow that is a huge accomplishment. To know what someone needs is indeed an honor, a blessing, and a grand responsibility. Not responsibility like moral obligation, more like when you witness someone speak out loud what they really care about, you're witnessing their responsibility to themselves. You're witnessing the parts of their responsibility that might not be respected or nurtured in many contexts. You're witnessing a responsibility that, for whatever reason, felt it had to stay hidden for so long. You're witnessing a part of their ecosystem that may have been attacked and antagonized in their previous life. You're witnessing something they care for that might have almost died. What is our responsibility to a beloved when we are given the gift of witnessing them straightforwardly naming their own sincere responsibilities? I personally care that this part of my friend should be nurtured, held, heard, and seen, and reciprocated in whatever phase of development it's in. Not because that's the right thing to do for a friend, not because I'm counting all the things that I'm going to get out of it. I care because I love you. I love the sincere part of you that's emerging. I want you to be who you are and have what you need. And that doesn't change, regardless of what I do or don't do for you. It doesn't change, even if I change my relationship to you. That sounds like a definition of sincere friendship, doesn't it? And if we're paying attention, it sounds like Pluto in Capricorn. It sounds like Saturn, Capricorn's ruling planet. Saturn is an expression of our sincere responsibilities that stand the test of time. Pluto is death. Pluto and Capricorn are the few small things that stay alive, that endure, that keep going, even after everything else has fallen apart. I care about you and your responsibility to yourself. That doesn't change, regardless of how our relationship does. I love what I said up there, that what you care about deserves reciprocity no matter what phase of development it's in. So if you say that you want success, and your definition of success is made of this depth of honesty, then I want you to have that right now, no matter what phase of development you're in, no matter where you are in your journey of nurturing and caring for your success. This brings up a very interesting conversation about reciprocity. We think of reciprocity as the thing that comes at the end of something, right? You do something for someone and then they pay you. Or you tell someone you'll do something for them and they pay you up front because they trust the end result. That's what they tell you in business coaching, right? You have to sell your audience on the end result and that's why they'll buy your shit. That's how you get reciprocity up front. Is that how reciprocity works in friendship? The ancestral teachings in this story beg to differ. The story is telling us here that the true nature of reciprocity isn't bound to an end result. It's not tied to one phase of development. It's tied to what you actually care about in every phase of development. It's tied to what your responsibilities actually are to yourself. Thus, the most challenging aspect of living, according to principles and practices of sacred reciprocity, is discerning in any given moment what is and isn't your responsibility to care for. Say, are there any, like, business models out there that function on the true nature of reciprocity? I don't want friendships where I only get reciprocated after I've successfully accomplished my deliverables. And I don't want business to feel like that either. Man, I wish we could just like live in an economy that exchanges resources through principles and practices of sacred reciprocity. I wish there was like an earth-honoring, cosmically inspired economy that more and more of us could opt into. And then, you know, our young people would be like, that's what I want to be when I grow up. I don't want to work for Hollywood. I want to be a planetary artist in residence. It would be so much more fulfilling to just, like, practice living like that, let alone run a business. Ugh, Alexis, I wish that someone would just, like, get on that already. I know, David. Ugh, what a puzzler. But wait, what about the stage? Because over here at Otherworldly Giants, we practice ceremonial, celestial, musical theater in craft and in life. Reciprocity does come at the end of the show. The audience claps and cheers. You come back and you take a second bow. You don't get any of that until the end. And one of the rules of writing is that you must earn your ending. You must engage proper storytelling technology throughout the whole journey in order to successfully land your ending. Or else you don't move people. You don't satisfy the room. But hold on, okay, is the applause actually reciprocity? I mean, it is, but no, like reciprocity is offered throughout the whole story, right? Reciprocity is audience engagement, you know? You listen, you laugh, you cry, you make sounds, you think. Your audience, you know, they're not watching you with their arms crossed, rolling their eyes in the third row, waiting for you to fail, even though... I literally have had those experiences as a stage performer. LOL. But a good audience isn't expecting you to solve their problems or give them answers. They're here because they want to listen and connect. We don't reciprocate the storyteller because she promises an outcome. We reciprocate throughout the whole process because she's showing us something real about who she is. The story will tell you what the storyteller really cares about. The story shows you what responsibility the storyteller is carrying for herself, her lineages, and the world. A story is made of the storyteller's most sincere responsibilities coming forward that, for whatever reason, had to stay hidden for so long. A story is her depth of self that yearns to be touched and moved and held. And you don't know what happened to that responsibility before she showed it to you. In her previous life, it may have been attacked and antagonized, and you don't know all the ways that it almost died before getting here. That's probably why, out of anything and everything that you could have told you about, they chose this. They chose to say something important. As an audience, as a friend, what is our responsibility to a beloved who just told you what they care about? What is our collective responsibility to the storyteller? We don't come to her for answers or for deliverables. We don't expect her to solve our problems. We come here because we want to be in relationship. Because when a story tells us what it cares about, that moves us too. Our hands and hearts are touched, and we feel it tangibly in our body. We feel more like ourselves, and we remember more of what we really care about. And that does solve our problems. It does give us the answers we need. What's the truth about what art can do during times of genocide? What's the role that art can play in a revolution? Can we bring forward deeper definitions and experiences of this question? If we are here to remind ourselves and humanity as a whole of what we really care about as a species, doesn't that make our contributions non-negotiable? Doesn't that make the storyteller worthy of our time? But okay, so if reciprocity is given throughout the whole story, what is the applause for then? It's appreciation. It's celebration. What's the difference between reciprocity, appreciation, and celebration? If these were all ancestors in the universe, with minds and hearts of their own, with important things to say, what would they say? Appreciation and celebration are essential parts of the ritual of storytelling, and that means the storyteller inherently understands that landing the ending is not actually the end. At the end of a story, you don't just disappear, okay? You come back for the bow. You stay there as long as the audience is applauding and cheering for you, and you do 3 encores if that's what you need to do. If that's what everyone needs to share and express their love and their grief for everything we just experienced together. Yeah, witches, I do it for the applause. I do it for the talk back, the post-show mixer, the hugs and tears in the lobby, the chance to hear from audience members so they can tell you their thoughts and their questions, the Q&A where you divulge behind-the-scenes secrets of how the sausage was made, where you pull back the wizard's curtain, and you give people a chance to express themselves, to release, to breathe. Then, it's the most important part. You go out for late-night food with the people you made the story with, and you talk about everything. At least, that's always been my favorite part. I am never complete without that. It wasn't enough for me to just tell you a story about a mama bird and a little bird. I needed to take you through my writer and director commentary. We needed to unlock the gems, the weapons, the offerings that never expire, the spiritual lessons, and the principles of ancestral artistry. We needed to do what we do here. Open heart surgery, storytelling. Now our collective experience of this small story is so rich, and who the story is so giant in all that it can offer, even as it is still learning how to fledge. If you know me, you know how much I advocate for reverence on the end of life journey. It's what everything is for. It's to celebrate what you just did. is to celebrate what already has been done. This phase of development is our ability to appreciate the past. That doesn't mean we condone everything that happened to us in our past. It just means we receive it. When we find out that Little Bird doesn't care about the horrible things that happened to her in her past, what does she actually mean? Is she telling us that she doesn't care about herself, she doesn't care about her trauma, she doesn't care about her healing, or she doesn't care when horrible things happen to others either? Or are we having a much deeper conversation? If I could look back at this story that I wrote and discern one principle of ancestral artistry that is trying to come forward and show itself, what would it be? I would say maybe the principle is appreciation is paramount, or celebration is king. But my answers don't have to be the same as yours. Even when we're studying the same story, even when it's the story that I wrote. Super nerds, here is your study question. Go back into the story and find one for yourself. Find a principle of ancestral artistry that is emerging for you through this story. One that is a reflection of your responsibility to yourself. One that is an expression of what you really care about. When I wrote this scene between Mama Bird and Little Bird, and Mama ended with that question, what do you actually care about? Like, I didn't know what my answer would be today. I just kept writing. And in the process of that, I was shown answers to questions that I didn't realize I was asking. What do I really care about according to this story? Sincere friendship. Yeah, I already have that, but I want it in a deeper way. I want reverence, celebration, and reciprocity. I already have it, but I want it in a deeper way. I just want my life like I always have, like I've always chosen. But right now, I just want a deeper experience of my life, especially after everything I've been through. That's what I care about. And that is what'll make me a better person and not on some grounds of morality. But maybe simply because it's worth my time. What is and isn't worthy of your time, good listener? This episode is part of a storytelling medicine bundle that I just dropped in the Otherworldly Giants Apothecary, and that means this episode is the catalyst to finally open the doors to our Timekeeper's Rare Apothecary. This medicine bundle is a gift basket and an altar that will help you release what isn't your responsibility, embrace what you really care about, and prepare to take flight. And this gift basket is a gift in that it is completely free to access this medicine bundle. Check out all the links in the show notes for everything you need to know and flap those wings, little birdies. Until next time, I am Shanga, and I am celebrating 40 years of service, forward and backward.